He's the columnist for the Register Guard. Find his work on the cover of the Register Guard sports section, like today. Catch up online, registerguard.com. Follow on Twitter, the handle at AustinMeekRG. Austin, how are you today?
Hey, Steve, I'm doing fine. Good to be with you.
Okay, let's start with the disturbing story about OSU pitcher Luke Heimlich. We learned last week he's a registered sex offender, entered a guilty plea to molesting a little girl. I'm sure you've heard from a bunch of people beyond just the comment section in today's article. Just in general, what kinds of responses have you gotten that you find to be disturbing?
Well, I'd heard about this phenomenon, but I'd never really experienced it until now, of when you have a sports figure who is found to have committed a crime like this, just how much of the public reaction focuses on the perpetrator of the crime and his future and what he deserves and what's best for him, and how little of it focuses on the victim of the crime and how having the perpetrator in this high-profile position might affect that person. The vast majority of responses that I've gotten, and not all of them certainly, but the vast majority were about Luke Heimlich and Luke Heimlich's professional future and, you know, the penalty that he'd paid and what was best for him. And, you know, it's part of the reason why, and this was the point I was trying to make in the column, it's part of the reason why I just think sports does not mix well with a serious issue like sexual abuse, because we have a certain prism through which we see sports, and we think about sports in a certain way, and talent is king in sports. You know, there's some interesting human psychology, I think, in how we look at people who possess really rare talent, exceptional talent. It kind of blinds us, I think, to looking at all the angles of this. So that's one thing that really has kind of taken me aback in the response to the column, is just how hard it is for people to see this through any other lens than Luke Heimlich and Luke Heimlich's future.
Yeah, what kind of gets me is seems to be very common now, from the original piece by Danny Moran of The Oregonian to what you've written, is information, data, facts presented by the media, if it goes against the beliefs or the rooting interests of a particular group, they attack the reporter or the story, truth be damned. So I'm kind of curious, as a journalist who's careful, has sources, checks information, goes through a verification process, how does that sit with you?
I mean, it's part of the deal. It's unfortunate. You know, as a reporter, if you break a story like Danny did, that has consequences for the team you cover, that fans aren't going to be happy. So you expect that reaction. It's still disappointing, but you expect it. You know, one other point, one thing that's interesting to me is, you know, there are dozens of reasons that would disqualify a person from playing college sports. You know, the main one being ability. You know, you're too slow, or you're too small, or you're too fat, or you got bad grades, or you got injured, or maybe you took money from an agent, committed an NCAA violation. You know, all those reasons are considered acceptable reasons to deny somebody the opportunity to play college sports. But then when you take somebody who pleaded guilty to molesting a child and say maybe that person shouldn't play college sports, you have all these people coming out of the woodwork to say, whoa, whoa, whoa. Don't take this away from this person. This person deserves to play. I don't know. It's hard for me to understand when there are so many legitimate reasons why somebody might not have the opportunity to play college sports, why this shouldn't be one of them.
We're talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. So it always seems like, okay, now it's the aftermath. We see Brenda Tracy, a victim of a horrific crime involving Oregon State athletes, now a major advocate on behalf of those who've suffered a similar fate. She has, you know, gone through this process. So from your angle, is it time, and hopefully without the usual bureaucratic eternal timeline for conferences, universities, all involved to do what they can to just say, no, sexual abuse convictions, you could be a free person, you could pursue an education, you're just not getting a scholarship.
Well, there is going to be a lot of bureaucracy wrapped up in it. It's unavoidable. Anytime you're talking about making a policy that's going to apply across the board, there's so many different angles that have to be considered that it's going to be complicated. And I'm not going to pretend that it's just as simple as waving a magic wand from the Pac-12 commissioner and saying, okay, no more. We're never going to offer another scholarship to a player who has a sexual assault conviction in his background. There's a lot of details that would have to be worked through of, are all sexual offenses equal? Is there a scale? What actually can schools find out? What information do they have access to? What information is going to be sealed? It's a complicated question, and I'm not going to pretend that it's not, but I do think it's necessary and it's possible for the Pac-12 schools to get together and make some kind of uniform policy so everybody's on the same page when it comes to where they stand about recruiting athletes who have these types of things in their background.
Yeah, well, now it's going to be curious to see where we go from here. All right, let's get to some lighter stuff. You wrote last week a follow-up to Oregon softball. We saw an awful call by the umpires on a bunt that was just simply foul. 10 years or so ago, the College Softball World Series, probably an afterthought to most, but now ESPN, it's a big national event. Time to offer some version of replay or coach's challenge because magnitude-wise, there's just more on the line.
Steve, we've talked about replay in the past, and you're a fan of replay, right? You're a replay guy. And I think I'm a little more skeptical of replay. I like some aspects of it. I think it's become a real problem in college football, how it's implemented, at least in college football, I don't like. So I have mixed feelings about it. But I actually agree with Mike White when he says that it would make sense to have it in the softball postseason for a couple reasons. I think what you mentioned, the growth of the sport, the fact that the College World Series is on ESPN and is getting really good ratings. A lot of people are watching it. There is more attention on it now, and there's also the technology to do replay and do it well in the postseason. I also think the softball game is pretty conducive to being able to have replay because it's a quick game. It's not like baseball. baseball, you get bogged down with pitching changes and walks, and the games take a long time, but softball games really move fast, and there's a lot of close plays, too, because the field is so small. So I think replay actually could work really well in college softball. I like Mike White's idea of making it sort of like the NFL, where you have a challenge flag. It's not like every play is getting reviewed. So I actually, even though I'm not a huge fan of replay across the board, I liked his idea.
All right, a general thought on the Oregon softball program. They lost a lot last year, and then with a bunch of freshmen, they made it far this year. And, they lose Nikki Udria, Danica Mercado, Sammy Puentes, and that's it. When you consider what we're seeing, the coach, the facilities, the recent success, another recruiting class, I mean, how well set up are they to be a regular atop this conference and, maybe making trips to Oklahoma City?
Well, they're in a really good position. I thought it was interesting talking to Mike White last week about their season 2 years ago when they lost in the Super Regionals to UCLA. Still a really good season. They won 48 games. They won their fourth straight Pac-12 title. But I think Mike came away from that season feeling like something wasn't quite right. And they sort of went back to the drawing board, and one of the things that they identified was their chemistry was not as good as it could be. So they've really made a point leading into this season to try to have better chemistry, and some of the comments from the players after the season made it sound like it was a big difference in the dugout, in the clubhouses here, in terms of their chemistry. So whatever they did, it seemed like it worked because the season they had this year, even though they saw their Pac-12 streak end, I think they feel like this was a better season than last year because they did go to the World Series in a year when there weren't expectations that were real high going into it. So, yeah, I think they're in a really good position now to carry this forward.
Yeah, they're just fun to watch. We continue with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. A little track and field. After a slow start, the Oregon women pulled off a first. They won the what they're calling the Triple Crown, cross-country, indoor, outdoor. But I guess a similar question, different sport, when you look at where they're at, how they recruit, sprints, distance, the kind of powerhouse Robert Johnson has built. I mean, any reason to think this time next year we won't be saying, wow, did they do it again?
Well... Yeah, it's a tough thing to do. It had never been done on the women's side, so it's hard to sit here today and predict that they'll be in position to do it again next year. But they definitely do have that women's program up and running, and you know we'll see who comes back and all of that. But certainly an impressive season for Oregon. A big question there is Braven Rogers, because she's just amazing to watch. If you're not a track and field fan or if you don't watch a lot of track and field, maybe it's hard to appreciate, but the way that she commands every single race, it's hard to describe, but it's really fun to watch. She's just a really special athlete, and you saw it in that, in that 4x4 to win the meet with everything on the line. You just knew that she was not going to lose. She was not going to let it happen. And that's a pretty special thing when you have an athlete where you can put her out there and just know that she's not going to lose.
Let's get to a couple of NBA Finals thoughts. The harsh judgment we pass on those who end up losing a series like this. So LeBron averages 34-12-10. He's never had a five-game stretch like that in his career. What do you make of those who are, like, pointing fingers at him like, you really should have done more?
Well, yeah. I'm kind of done with the LeBron thing. I understand. I know it comes up every year. And there are always those sequences like he had in, what was it, game three.
Right.
Where, he makes the pass at the end instead of taking the shot, and that will bring out everybody who's ever had a criticism of LeBron and how he performs in the clutch. Hey, it was not LeBron James' fault that Cleveland lost that series, not in any way, shape, or form. He, even as amazing as Kevin Durant was in that series, which, Kevin Durant was otherworldly in that series, LeBron James was still, in my opinion, the best player on the floor, but the team around him was vastly inferior to the five guys that the Warriors put on the floor. So, the thing that is kind of discouraging to me as a casual NBA fan is the fact that you look at LeBron, possibly the greatest player of his generation, possibly the greatest player ever, had one of the great final series ever. His team wasn't really in it at any point. There was no time when you thought the Cavaliers really had a shot to win that series. That's discouraging as somebody who likes parity and would like to see a more competitive NBA.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Finally, so well-documented, Kevin Durant left a good team to join the best team to make him a powerhouse team and took a lot of grief for leaving Oklahoma. But I look at it like this. If you're going to tick off everyone outside of Oakland, could he have done it any better?
Well, it was some pretty high level trolling, I guess you could say, from,
yep,
from KD. Look, I can't fault the guy personally. If you want to get a ring, you want to play with the best team. You want to play with the team that has the best chance to win it. I don't know that I wouldn't have made the same decision if I were in his shoes. But like I said, as a casual fan of the game, I don't like it. Because I look at this Warriors team now and say, geez, what's next year going to be like? I mean, I remember we had the same conversation this time last year about this next NBA season could be really boring.
Yeah.
And it was. It was not a not a memorable NBA season at all, and I'm afraid next year and for the foreseeable future could be the same.
Yeah, the ultimate anticlimax. And for the record, I would have taken the grief and done exactly what Durant did and just be like, so we're going to kick everybody's rear end, so get over it. All right, Austin, always good stuff. Appreciate you kicking off our Tuesday. RegisterGuard.com online. Pick up a copy of the Register Guard on Twitter at Austin Meek, RG. Thanks a lot, Austin.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Have a good week.
You too. Take it easy.